The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Brady getting the best of him. Look who's here. Super Bowl champion Ryan Clark with us. Rye, good to see you, sir. We will get to you in just
hey,
a moment.
Hey, how you doing? What's up, fellas?
I'm good, good.
Yeah.
What's that about?
What's up? He knows almost, what that's about.
Almost
he know we were talking about Baker
almost
Mayfield and against the Steelers yesterday.
Ryan, what's that about?
We talk about it. He knows what it was about.
Man, this dude was texting me throughout the day because he was finally right one time. Told you.
Right.
You're a traitor.
Right. You know, a dead clock's right it twice
was,
a day.
It was Ryan who came out and called him just a guy, though. Before anyone else, he said, look,
saying,
he's just
to,
a guy.
All I'm trying to say is I don't know how y'all missed this. To be a former Steeler and the question whether or not somebody would be able to run against that defense. I mean, it is appalling. It is appalling. It's blasphemy. I don't know how he's a former Steeler, got a ring to show for it, the Super Bowl. I don't know how Tomlin and the crew would even want to talk to him like that. He was actually on the air. You got to run on them. I said, run on them. Run on
them. And how
run
did they
the
how'd they respond? Huh? Maybe Ryan was just teeing him up, getting
what
him going.
What did Mike Tomlin say
and they
the
put the beat
conference all those
yeah,
years ago?
Yeah, he was just getting
run
him going.
Ball,
he was firing him up.
Is it possible that the brothers spent so much time in Louisiana? He's been away from the Pittsburgh.
All right.
Maybe, just maybe, he wanted to sit up there and throw a little shade
Smiley,
on them. I mean, if he was around them, I don't think he would have done that.
I thought we had a different topic.
We do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. You should be hosting the show. All right. According to FBI, the Bucs have the highest chance in the
Looking
NFC.
Looking like a pastor. Go ahead.
Why?
I'm sorry.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Stephen A.
I'm sorry.
Are Brady's Bucs the team to beat in the NFC?
I'm not going to give them that yet. I'm not saying that may not be the case by the end of the season. But right now, first of all, you got to show me you can beat the New Orleans Saints. That's number one. Number two, I also got to look at you against Seattle because Russell Wilson is special. DK Metcalf is special. You know what I'm saying? Lockett is special. You got Greg Olsen as your tight end. It's special. And on top of it all, you got a running game.
That's questionable.
And that defense is questionable. We understand that. But what they do offensively, you know what? I don't see Seattle losing like that to Tampa Bay the way Green Bay did yesterday. I'm looking at Seattle. I'm looking at New Orleans as two teams that I need to see Tampa Bay go up against. Can they beat them? You're damn right they can beat them. But I got to see you do it before I'm just going to sit up there and elevate you to that status. I don't think you're beating a Seattle, okay, or a New Orleans with Tom Brady throwing for 166 yards, even though I thought he was efficient and obviously didn't turn the ball over.
Yeah, if it was 1985, Bill Parcells would be raving. If that was a Phil Simms line, 170 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions, and you win the line of scrimmage. They are a top three team at this moment in the NFC because the difference is, I wouldn't say they're the team to beat because Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, and I know they just beat them. That happens. He's not always going to throw two interceptions, almost never throws a single interception, and Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. But when you look at the Seahawks and Russell Wilson, their bend-don't-break defense, I don't know. They give up a lot of yards and a lot of points, even if their red zone defense is better than the defense at other times. They have a coach. They have a quarterback. They have offensive weapons wherever you look. They can run the ball. They can do a lot of things. The Green Bay Packers don't have a defense, and also their offensive weapons are a little underrated when Devontae Adams is there and they can run the ball, but it's not like Seattle. You don't have Lockett and Metcalf. You know, you're more reliant even on the quarterback. The Bucs don't have the same quarterback as the other two teams. He's not capable as much at this point in his career or ever with his legs, right? But what really impressed me was the way they won the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball. Their offensive line had their way with the Packers' defensive front. Their defensive line and their defense, period, was able to exert pressure. So if you win the line of scrimmage and otherwise you have a defense, you know, and you have a quarterback who's going to cut down on the mistakes, you have to consider that team at this moment top three. Not the team to beat, but top three.
Yeah, I can't just throw them in there as the team to beat, but I do agree with Max. I think the difference with the NFC this year as opposed to last year was last year you looked at the NFC and it seemed pretty clear cut. It looked like the San Francisco 49ers and the New Orleans Saints throughout the season were clear cut the two best teams in the NFC. We don't really have that this year. One week it could be the Seattle Seahawks. Another week it could be the Green Bay Packers. Hell, sometimes it could be the New Orleans Saints. And if Nick Foles gets hot, you can even throw the Chicago Bears in there. But what I do see with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is amongst all of those teams, they have the best chance to be dominant defensively. And that's the scary part. Even with the Chicago Bears being able to rush four, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were built at the linebacker spot to stop two teams and to beat two teams. They were built to stop CMC and the Carolina Panthers and Alvin Kamara and the New Orleans Saints. And what we saw yesterday was Aaron Jones, a player who is definitely in the mold of those two, get hunted and get followed and get chased and get hit by Lavonte David and Devin White. And then we saw this young secondary of Jamel Dean and Carlton Davis, who I think is ascending to be one of the top number one corners, and these young safeties really play great on the back end. And then we watched them rush Aaron Rodgers, and we saw Aaron Rodgers, who had been the bad man. You know, that sounds more like a sheep than a goat. The bad man that Stephen A. Smith had been talking about all season, but we didn't see that yesterday. And so now you look at the team in its totality as it's getting healthy, getting Chris Godwin back, and now Mike Evans is getting healthy, an efficient Tom Brady. So what we're starting to see is it may come down to these teams with these dynamic quarterbacks, the Seattle Seahawks and the Green Bay Packers, two teams in the Saints and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, or maybe even the Chicago Bears, so three teams that could really play defense and have veteran experienced, grizzled quarterbacks that can win the game. So think about it. If we get down to that and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Todd Bowles play defense like they played yesterday, which one of us, well, I know it's not going to be Stephen A. I know it's not going to be me. It may be Ravine Maxwell Kellerman that says he's not going to bet on Tom Brady if this defense is playing this way. But if they are, I believe they become the toughest out in the NFC.
Oh, really? Including the Bears, who just beat them because their quarterback made the play at the end of the game to put them in field goal range and Tom Brady couldn't? I don't know. I like your Bears pick, too. I think at this moment, given the way they're playing at this moment, I would put them, even though they beat Tampa, in that fourth slot. But you make a good point. If Nick Foles just stays healthy, Bears should be right there,
well,
too.
Listen, the way my trepidation about Green Bay is that Green Bay looked eerily similar yesterday to how they looked in the NFC Championship game against a vaunted San Francisco 49ers defense.
Yeah, exactly.
And the fact that it was, it was reminiscent of that kind of dominance, it leads me to lose faith in them, because when you can get in Aaron Rodgers' face, when you can sit up there and mess and basically disrupt what they want to do, they seem to fall apart. It's not like the defense or the special teams picks them up. They seem to fall apart when their offense is rattled to some degree. That's not the case with Seattle. And I don't think that, and more so than it is with Chicago. Even though I like Nick Foles, the bottom line is, am I sold on Chicago? No. I'm sold on them defensively, but I'm not really sold on them having that punch that you need offensively. Seattle, I ain't worried about that at all.
I'll say one thing for Tom Brady now. I'll say something nice about Tom Brady. After last week, with all the mental errors made on the field, with the offensive line moonwalking down the field, and with Tom Brady humiliating himself by forgetting the downs after chewing them out, I was completely unsurprised that they played mistake-free football this week. And when people point to Brady's leadership and all that, I do think that has something to do with a mistake-free performance. A Tom Brady quarterback team, after a game like last week, is going to cut weight. It doesn't mean they have to be perfect like they were yesterday, basically, but you know they're not going to repeat that, and that's to his credit.
And to Tom Brady's credit, after losses, I believe he's won 70% of the next game, or over 70% of the next games. And go back to the Los Angeles Chargers game where Tom Brady throws the pick six. They're down big to the Los Angeles Chargers, and they end up winning. They forced a fumble at the end of the second quarter. Bruce Arians, after that game, says, you know what, last year we lose that game by 20. Think about how this game started. You lose the week before with bonehead mistakes. Tom Brady forgets what down it is, and you're down to Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. You're down 10 nothing. Things could go haywire. Things could go awry. But instead, Jamel Dean makes an interception. The next drive, Carlton Davis breaks up a pass, and it's intercepted. And now you go in and you score. And now you're up 14-10, and you begin to pour it on. You don't make the mistakes that handcuff your team. You don't make the mistakes that keeps you from winning the games. I think this is the progression of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I believe we may see another down game. We may see a game where we wonder about them. But this team is different. This team is different with Tom Brady. And I was as hard as anybody was last week on Tom Brady because he can't make that mistake. But also, this is part of his greatness. And so we'll see what the end of this season looks like. If this offense could get anywhere to where all of us were excited about it when Tom Brady became the quarterback of this team through free agency and play defense like that, then they will have a ticket in the Super Bowl and will be hosting in their home stadium.
Well, that's exactly what I was pointing out at the beginning of the show when I talked about giving Tom Brady credit. We understand Aaron Rodgers, he had probably the worst game of his career, and we get Todd Bowles in that defense. But Aaron Rodgers, the steady hand that he is, again, Jameis Winston through the first six games last year threw 12 interceptions. Tom Brady's got four. And you know that this dude is not going to beat himself. So when you go down 10 to nothing, all of a sudden, that's a reason to panic and collapse until you switch quarterbacks and you see the difference between a six-time Super Bowl champion and a guy that gave new meaning to the 30 for 30.
That's legit. Brady put himself in a great position. He chose a team with a defense, with offensive weapons everywhere, with a coach. He chose the right team, and he did leave the cupboard bare for Belichick in New England.
7-9.
But I will say this. Whatever.
Here's the last
Belichick right now is 2-3. Brady right now is 4-2. And in the end, no one wants to hear excuses. They just look at the record.
Yeah.
The thing I want to say about the Green Bay Packers is this, guys.
Yep. Go ahead, Ry. Sorry.
One thing about the Packers is this. Think about the Los Angeles Chargers and the San Francisco 49ers two times last year. Matt LaFleur has never had a game where Aaron Rodgers wasn't just flowing, where the offense wasn't just moving, and he found ways to get them back on track. If you're the Green Bay Packers, this is an issue. Matt LaFleur does not make adjustments in games that the flow is not going in his way. And if he can't start to do that, if he can't understand that or learn that, they can't win a championship even with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback.
So Matt LaFleur feeds off of Aaron Rodgers to get any success that he has had, and then plays a part in drafting his successor.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Ryan Tannehill has been incredible, and these Titans, Max Kellerman, taking down the Texans in OT yesterday. Do you think at this point Tannehill should be among the MVP candidates?
Yes, I do. I wouldn't say he's leading the pack, but he is in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. Last year, Jameis Winston and Mariota quarterbacked the Bucs and the Titans, and they were number one and two picks in that same draft. And now neither one of them are starting quarterbacks. And they don't deserve to be so far in their careers. Tannehill took over for Mariota on a bad team. And they've basically, they've won almost all their games since he took over. Brady took over from Winston on a good team. That would have been better had Winston just not given the other team 30 extra possessions and 112 extra points. And Brady so far has played more mistake-free football, and so they're 4-2. Tannehill's team is undefeated. I don't want to hear it's just Derrick Henry, who's great. Tannehill has a lot to do with their success. You look at QBR, right, which is there's no perfect stat, but QBR, which is invented here at ESPN, has, it's like a weighted average of a lot of important things that a quarterback does, including some of the things that go into the classical stats that people like to use. Tannehill's fourth in the league. Tom Brady's 19th. Tannehill has an 83.3 QBR. Tom Brady is about 17 points behind that. And my point is, could you imagine right now if Brady was just doing even a little better than he's doing, people would be saying, yeah, he belongs in the MVP conversation. So why doesn't Tannehill? who's in a similar situation, both replacing quarterbacks, but one on an undefeated team, putting up elite numbers, 364 yards yesterday with four passing touchdowns, Stephen A. This is not a dude who's, like, I understand he's dependent on coaching. He wasn't good with bad coaching. He's good with good coaching. But that doesn't mean anyone would be good with good coaching. He's giving you a premium, a real premium above and beyond what just an average starting quarterback would do in his situation. And I think based on the numbers, based on the production, based on the wins, based on how the team did before he got there last year, based on what they're doing this year so far, on his most recent performance, he's in the MVP conversation.
Can't argue with that. But I'm not sold. I'm just not sold.
Is it just the name?
Let me explain. So you got all of these guys. I mean, you got A.J. Brown. You got Corey Davis. You know, you got all of these guys. You got a couple of 200-yard receivers, a couple of guys hovering around 170 yards receiving, et cetera, et cetera. He's completing, what is it, about 69% of his passes, 70% of his passes. I got that. I understand that. Just two interceptions, 13 touchdowns. Those are impressive numbers. And when you look at it and the fact that they're undefeated, you can't ignore that. I got that. Here's my issue. Derrick Henry's a monster. And the brother's getting about 25 carries a game. 24.6 carries a game. Okay? Averaging about 5 yards a carry. 24.6 carries a game. You saw what he did. And then you bring up last year. Tannehill wasn't undefeated. They went 9-7 on the season. Marcus Mariota was 2-4. They bring Tannehill. Tannehill goes 7-3. When they went to the AFC Championship game, do I have to remind you what happened? Derrick Henry against New England, 182 yards rushing. Derrick Henry against the Baltimore Ravens, 195 yards rushing. Okay, and then when he was normal and had about just 69 yards rushing, what happened? They went home. That's what the hell happened. What I'm saying is this. It doesn't matter. Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes, and get that. What I'm saying is, when they couldn't run the football, what happened?
They had a lead, and Mahomes came back on them. He came back on everyone.
But they had the lead. Why? Because of Derrick Henry. That's why the hell it happened. All I'm saying to you is this.
He's not as good as Patrick Mahomes.
You got a workhorse like Derrick Henry, okay? You give him the damn ball, and then a lot of things look easier because you got guys stacked in the box because they know this brother right here can run all over them, which compromises secondary.
Mariota had Derrick Henry.
Listen, I understand.
RC. That.
Well, Marcus, you know how I feel about Marcus Mariota. We really going to go there. I'm trying to be nice, Max. I'm trying to be nice. I can tell you about Marcus Mariota. I didn't say Ryan Tannehill was a scrub now. But when you talk about MVP.
Ryan. Talk to Stephen
A. Yeah, he's on the, he's on the list, but I'm just saying. Go ahead. I didn't know you were still there, Ryan.
He's absolutely on the list. And if you look at this list, it starts with Russell Wilson. Obviously, we had Aaron Rodgers in that conversation. We had Josh Allen in that conversation. If I remember correctly, and it wasn't that long ago because they won two games in 5 days, on Tuesday night, Josh Allen and Ryan Tannehill went head-to-head. And Ryan Tannehill was perfect in the red zone. And the Tennessee Titans were perfect in the red zone. And Josh Allen through two interceptions. See, this is, it's two things that Ryan Tannehill is falling victim of. It's like, so let's say Stephen A was a hunter, right? And Stephen A was out in the woods and he got sprayed by a skunk. No matter how many times Stephen A took a bath or how much perfume and cologne he put on, every time I'd walk around him, I'd probably think, man, he still
Adam
smells
Gase.
Skunky. See, that's what's
Adam
happened
Gase?
To Ryan Tannehill. Adam
Why
Gase,
I got to be
Adam
me
Gase
with the skunk
a little bit.
Reference? Why I got to be me?
I like this
because
thought.
You've been acting.
That was a great mental picture for me.
Because really? You've been acting
you
funny today.
Really?
You've been
yeah,
acting funny
I
today.
I couldn't picture it.
Okay.
All right.
Go ahead.
In a
go
Tom
ahead.
Ford suit at that. And so now when we see Ryan Tannehill, we can't separate the two. We can't get Gase's Tannehill out of our head and then focus on Vrabel or Arthur Smith's Tannehill. Here's the other
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, I agree,
we've
Ryan.
Got
it's
used
the name.
To using these. Yeah, we've got used to using these two. And, man, when you look at Russell Wilson, it's like, holy cow. When you see Aaron Rodgers, it's like, oh, my goodness. But let's just think about the numbers. Let's go back to 2016, Matt Ryan. They had like 38 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. The team was 11-5. You mean to tell me Ryan Tannehill ain't going to finish about there? The Tennessee Titans probably won't finish with a better record? You go back, you go to the next year. Carson Wentz was playing extremely well. He gets injured, and then Tom Brady, who was having a very solid season, not an eye-popping season, but a very solid season on a very good football team, and he wins the MVP. So, see, Stephen A., we got to stop having these biases. All he's done is won football games since becoming the Tennessee Titans quarterback. There's a game this year where Derrick Henry only rushed for 84 yards. There's another game where Derrick Henry only rushed for 57 yards. You know what the Titans' record is in those games? 2-0 because they're undefeated. Because Ryan Tannehill is their quarterback. And because when Ryan Tannehill gets in the red zone, they score points because he doesn't make mistakes. This dude's an MVP candidate.
You just don't buy it? Mind if I take over for a second, Stephen A?
I will. I'll get back to Ryan.
Here's the thing. Because you said something that's right on the money. When you talk about MVP so far this year, Ryan Tannehill's never going to be Patrick Mahomes. Of course, Patrick Mahomes, better than Ryan Tannehill. Every day you take Patrick Mahomes. But if we're talking about performance so far this year, and you just talk about clean, no stinkers, right? Rodgers has had a bad one. Mahomes has had a bad one. Lamar Jackson's had a bad one. Josh Allen's had a bad one. Roethlisberger and Brady have been pretty good, but nothing where you say that's an MVP, right? Russell Wilson is alone at the top. Yep. And the only other dude with no stinkers is Tannehill. And then you say, okay, no stinkers, but has he also been good? Well, as we said yesterday, 364 yards, 4 passing touchdowns. Yeah, he has been. He's hit pretty good highs, and he hasn't had any lows, and his team is undefeated, Stephen A. No, he's not Patrick Mahomes. But if you had to do an honest assessment of who's the MVP so far this year, Russell Wilson. Tannehill got an argument for coming in second right now.
Well, if you recall, if one of y'all, if at least one of y'all want to listen instead of bringing up questions about the Woods, even though I'm in New York City and you the one in Louisiana, go figure that one out. Oh, I mean, that's fine. You go ahead and do that. What I'm trying to say is this. I didn't say I disagree with y'all. I said I'm not sold. Of course, based on the team's record, his success thus far, completing 70% of his passes, they're undefeated. You know, I get all of that. What I'm saying is that when I think about MVPs and I think about the Tennessee Titans, there's a name that comes up before I even think about Ryan Tannehill, and that name is Derrick Henry. Now, if he continues to do this as the season progresses, I'll stand back. But the bottom line is that's just not how I feel when I look at him right now. I think about Derrick Henry, and I think about Vrabel, who I think is a leading candidate for coach of the year, to be quite honest with you. And those things really, really jump out at me.
You don't think
Tannehill is no scrub. Okay, he's not that, and I get all of that, but I want to see him in some pressurized situations where his arm comes to the rescue.
I know what
instead
you mean.
Of Derrick Henry's leg.
We'll see
the eyeball test doesn't tell you Tannehill's amazing or anything, but the results tell you he's really good. And when you look at what, like, Patrick Mahomes came back on all those quarterbacks last year.
Time out.
He was down
before
in
you
all
continue,
those.
Before you continue, because you brought up competition.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the schedule right now. Tennessee Titans, 4 of their 5 games. Denver, Jacksonville, Minnesota, and Houston. That's all. Continue.
But you know, Houston has Deshaun Watson, and the Bills have Josh Allen, and he was the best quarterback in both of those games. And Ryan's point about the stink of Adam Gase, the bottom line is you still don't believe that it's not much more situational coaching for Tannehill than it is.
Vrabel's a hell of a coach.
Yeah, right, but you think Vrabel's that because you just watched him suffer, like look like a bust with Adam Gase. You're the one who always points out Jeff Fisher.
It's hard to separate the past with Tannehill, but Stephen A's right. We got to see them play some real competition as well to see if he's MVP status. Ryan, you got the last word here.
Well, we'll get to see that against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and so we will know if he's MVP status. But this is the thing that we have to get out of our mind. The last two MVPs have been anomalies. It was Patrick Mahomes doing things we had never seen, throwing for 50 touchdowns, doing it in a way that the game has never had an opportunity to witness. And then we watched Lamar Jackson become the greatest runner at the quarterback position we'd ever seen, and his team totally dominate. There's still something to be said for good quality, mistake-free football that allows your football team to win games. And that's who Ryan Tannehill is.
Ryan Clark Molly is absolutely positively 1,000% correct on that, but that's the same argument he could have made against Baker Mayfield and didn't do it.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5X miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Cowboys quarterback Andy Dalton will get his first official start tonight on ESPN for Big D's Monday Night Football matchup against the Arizona Cardinals. Taking over under center after Dak Prescott's devastating ankle injury in Week 5's win against the Giants. The bad news. The last time the boys lost their starting quarterback in 2015 when Tony Romo broke his collarbone, the team finished 2-12 in their remaining games that season. The good news, this season the Cowboys have the fifth easiest remaining schedule in the NFL. RC still here with us. Stephen A., I'll start with you. What kind of expectations should Cowboys fans have? High, low, or zero expectations for Andy Dalton?
How about low? Remember that commercial? How about low? They're low expectations.
Really?
Because it's Andy Dalton. That's why. And I think that he's been contaminated. And his first 5 or 6 years in the National Football League, Andy Dalton was pretty damn good. But when you stay in Cincinnati too long, bad things happen to you. That just seems to be the case when it's when it comes to football.
Bad things
just happen.
Bad things happen in Dallas.
That's worse because the black cats running around there. But I mean, see, Cincinnati is just a different situation. At least there's no state taxes in the state of Texas, and Dallas is a beautiful city. And you're playing in a billion-dollar playpin, and you got an owner with the Stardust helmets and there's beautiful cheerleaders to look at. And all, there's a whole bunch of things to like about Dallas, even when the team stinks. There's nothing to like about Cincinnati. I mean, so the bottom line is, when you look at Andy Dalton, he's had a losing record the last 4 years. Percentages have dropped. We get all of that. Now, he's got a plethora of weapons, and I understand it. He's not a scrub. He can throw the football. You got Gallup. You got Amari Cooper. You got CeeDee Lamb. We get all of that, okay? But the reality is that the expectations to live up to or exceed whatever it was that Dak Prescott brought to the table, in order to do that, you're going to have to get a ball to Ezekiel Elliott more and win some football games. But ultimately, when you look at Dak Prescott throwing the football, all right, he put up some pretty damn good numbers and deserves our respect. And I think we're going to appreciate him more, even more so, when he's gone. The fact that Andy Dalton is going to have to live up to that. It's not like he's coming in there and there was some no-name that was there and, you know, Dallas just stunk up to join and that's it. No, we've been looking at Dak Prescott perform. And so with Andy Dalton, it's going to be, do you measure up to that to some degree? And that's why my expectations for him are not that high.
I disagree. I think they should have great expectations. Mm. Charles Dickens, Stephen A. Great expectations.
Charles Dickens.
Because, look, the fact of the matter is Dak Prescott's better than Andy Dalton. We all know this. But Andy Dalton's a competent NFL quarterback. And they got 5 games remaining with the NFC East and 5 games remaining out of the division. Okay. Can they go 3-2 against the Giants and Eagles and Washington? They got Washington twice and the Giants once. Can they split with the Eagles? They might go 4-1.
Of course.
Let's say they go 3-2 against the NFC East. Can they go 2-3 against the rest of the league? It's not the softest schedule against the rest of the league, but it's not the toughest either. They do have the Niners, but they also have the Bengals. They have the Ravens, but they also have the Vikings, right? And you know, and the Steelers are tough. But then again, the Cardinals are fine, but they're, you know, not amazing. Like, they should be able to win 2 out of those 5 games and go 3-2 against the division, which makes them 500 the rest of the way. Since they're 1 game below, that makes them a 7-win team. They should run away with the NFC East. Like, they'll run away with it because the division's so pathetic. So what people will remember is, well, how many wins they have with Dak Prescott? 1? and then Andy Dalton comes in and they go more or less 500 and win the division, it's going to make Andy Dalton look better compared to Dak Prescott than he really is. Yes, I think they should. I think they should expect, Cowboys fans should expect, to win the NFC East.
And what's sad is, Max, is that now that has become great expectations in Dallas. That is not great expectations. That is being the best of the worst. And that's exactly what you're saying. But I still think you're wrong. I think Andy Dalton.
In the land of the blind.
I think Andy Dalton's going to fall a little bit in between where both of you guys are saying. Because, see, here's what I know. You know, like, I like to paint pictures. Let's take First Take. For instance, First Take is an excellent show. First Take is a show I watch all the time when Molly and Max and Stephen A are on. It is an excellent show. We take one of y'all off, still an excellent show. Maybe not as good. Maybe doesn't fit as right. That's what the Dallas Cowboys are attempting to do. They're going to take their star, one of their stars of the show, one of the reasons why it worked, the main reason they were ever in any game, because he was asked to play perfect, and you're going to change him out. And Andy Dalton is competent. Andy Dalton is an NFL quarterback.
He is.
And he's going to have some moments because there are people to throw the football to. There is somebody to turn around and hand it to. But y'all don't forget, that defense stinks. Defense is legit, for lack of a better word, dookie. And we're going to see it tonight. You're going to get to see. I'm listening.
Oh, Lord.
Why can't I ever finish?
Because you used the word dookie. That's why. You can't use the word dookie on First Take. I mean, cause does it get cornier than that? Dookie on national television. Dookie? You're supposed to be cool. You're supposed to have some swag. And you use the word dookie on national television?
Well, you can use the word
Stephen
dookie.
A.
You can't use other words.
Stephen A.
I'm saying, I understand.
Stephen
I'm just
a.
talking about it was corny.
Stephen A. So here, see, here's the thing, Stephen A. When you do have swag, right, when you do have cool, you ain't got to force it. You ain't got to worry about it all the time. I ain't got to tell people. You understand what I'm saying? When I walk in the room, they know. And so when I'm trying to explain
you
that
can't take away
terrible,
from
I can say that defense is terrible.
Hey, Ryan. Let me just say real quick. To your point, if Stephen A. is not on the show, maybe someone else is doing a perfectly good job, but they don't stop the segment to let you know that you're corny for using the word dookie.
Oh, my God. Without Dak Prescott.
Without Dak Prescott, there's no one there
Ryan,
to
finish
say
your point
you can't
for
use
the
word dookie.
Ever.
They're not as good.
Now, well, all I'm saying is this. I believe Andy Dalton will be fine, but Andy Dalton will have to try to replace Dak Prescott, who was doing everything to keep this team in any game that they were in. I believe the Philadelphia Eagles win the NFC East. Andy Dalton shows the Dallas Cowboys that what Dak Prescott was doing was special. No, he may not be Patrick Mahomes. He may not be Russell Wilson, but for them, he is. And that was why he should have been paid. That's why this deal should have been done. And Andy Dalton is going to prove that even more than Dak was able
really?
To when he was
Ryan,
playing quarterback
Andy
for the
Dalton,
Dallas Cowboys.
You, so,
really?
That's my point. Yes, Dak is being victimized by circumstance a little here. But you don't think Andy Dalton can win 3 out of 5 games against the NFC East? Because if
his
he can.
His team was almost always got to the playoffs. They didn't just,
yeah.
But they didn't win in the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
They
win,
got there
like
almost every year.
70 wins, 60 losses for his career.
So we just going to sit up here and ignore the fact that Ryan Clark, outside of using the word dookie, I mean, just took away about 10
my
cool
God.
Points.
Let it
about
go.
10 cool points. Now, outside of that, he actually mentioned First Take and the Dallas Cowboys in the same breath. I mean, first of all, the Dallas Cowboys.
Good point.
Excuse me. We're number one in the mornings. Dallas Cowboys have perpetually stunk for years. Okay? They have come up short for years. The black cat is running around their franchise. They haven't won a championship in a quarter century. They got
the
worst fan base in American history. They make me sick. Okay? And this man is
going to
sit up there and mention the Cowboys and First Take it and say, "Y'all, you two, y'all just don't let him get away with that."
I slept on it. What was the comparison you were trying to make?
Stephen A. was saying the comparison was dookie.
Just trying to make.
Molly.
Oh, God.
I was trying to say that you guys are like the offense of the Dallas Cowboys, which is tops in the league. And if we took one of you away, you'd
good
still be great, but
I'd
not necessarily
the
same.
Good clarification, but for the record, when I show up on SportsCenter or various other places that I have to show up and do work, all I'm going to do is use the word dookie. And when I use that word, everybody's gonna know where I got it from, and let's see how it sounds. I'm going to leave it at that.
Stephen A., you can only use Dookie and be cool if you can get your hairline like this.
I got right. no shot
well,
at that.
Well, leave it on that note.
Hold on, wait. Ryan just turned out in his 40s. Come to me when you in your 50s, bro, and we'll have a conversation.
All right.
Come on.
We'll leave it there, Ryan. Stay with us. You all are unbelievable. Sometimes it is better to be a woman. Today at 5, it's Chiefs versus Bills. Both squads are 4-1. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Back in 2017, the Buffalo Bills traded away their number 10 draft pick to the Chiefs. Who did KC end up trading with that pick? Their eventual Super Bowl winning MVP, Mahomes. Tonight, Mahomes and the Chiefs will face the team that passed on that opportunity, going up against Josh Allen and the Bills, who sit atop the AFC East at 4-1. RC still here with us. Max, I'm starting with you, though. Is tonight a bigger game for the Chiefs or the Bills?
It's a great question. If I'm forced to answer that, because it's a big game for both, I'll say the Chiefs, whose defense has made them look vulnerable this year, but it didn't matter because Mahomes could overcome it until the last time we saw them, and then all of a sudden it was, nope, that's catching up to them. I think the Chiefs have to reestablish, especially actually on the defensive end, that they know 2 years ago they were a little underrated that way, but they really weren't quite good enough, although I felt, if not for a pre-snap penalty, that gave the Patriots new life in the AFC Championship game, they still would have probably won the Super Bowl. But then they actually did win the Super Bowl with a top third or so defense. The defense has looked like it's regressed. They're going to have to put out a better effort. And Mahomes is also going to have to show in a tough game he can work his magic. I think more is on line for the Chiefs, who no matter what happens, you always just believe are the best. Not if they lose, especially badly, this game.
I think you need to make up your mind. Do you believe in Patrick Mahomes or don't? Because you rave about how great he is and how he's the best on the planet and how there's really no need to panic. So if they lose this game, the reigning defending Super Bowl champions is going to be 4-2 instead of 4-1. Oh, my God, stop the presses. I mean, we have to stop it right now. I mean, what's going to happen to the Kansas City Chiefs if that happened? Excuse me. This game means virtually nothing to the Kansas City Chiefs. They're going to be fine. Even if they lose this game, they'll get their stuff in order with Eric Bieniemy, with Aaron, Andy Reid, with Tyreek Hill, with Travis Kelce, with all of these boys. The issue is the Buffalo Bills. Excuse me, you ain't been around primetime. We ain't accustomed to seeing the Bills in primetime. We're looking at this kid, Josh Allen. Let's look at his numbers here. Completed 69.3% of his passes, 1,589 yards, 14 touchdowns, just 3 interceptions, and a QBR of 86.8. Those are similar to the numbers Patrick Mahomes was putting up with his MVP season through those first 6 games in 2018. So when you look at Josh Allen, has he really, really arrived? Or is it all just, are we just blowing smoke here? Mm-hmm. When you look at Stephon Diggs, averaging over 101 yards a game. Excuse me, Minnesota, how's life without him now? Stephon Diggs is up in there. Okay, this brother's on center stage. Let's see what you've got. So when I look at the Buffalo Bills, Tre'Davious White was out with the shoulder injury. Now he's expected to come back in all likelihood tonight. I haven't guaranteed it, but they're anticipating he will come back. So we're going to find out what the Bills are going to do defensively because they've been struggling and they're perceived as being a different team when he's on there, on the field. I'm just looking at Buffalo right now, especially with New England.
struggling the way that they are, knowing that you have an opportunity to go up two games on them in a division that they have owned for the better part of the last two decades, and you are on a nationally televised stage against the reigning, defending Super Bowl champions, widely considered to have the best quarterback on the planet. And, oh, by the way, you can still get up on the New England Patriots and provide yourself a cushion knowing you got two games this season coming up against New England. I would say Buffalo definitely has the expectations placed on their shoulders. I'm looking to see what they do.
This is 100% about the Buffalo Bills. Stephen A. is exactly right. If the Kansas City Chiefs go 4-2, we'll say, you know what? Andy Reid will get it together. Patrick Mahomes will get it together. Tyrann Mathieu will get it together defensively. And honestly, I disagree with you, Max, about this defense of the Kansas City Chiefs. They'd actually played pretty well this season. They kept them in the game against the Chargers when the Chargers were playing great defense against Patrick Mahomes. They shut down the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson. You go back to the week against the New England Patriots, even though there was no Cam Newton, New England couldn't move the football. And so I think the defense played well until last week against the Las Vegas Raiders. So I don't necessarily know that there's any questions in that building. Can this team make a Super Bowl run? But let's look at the Buffalo Bills. You beat the Las Vegas Raiders. You beat the Los Angeles Rams. You get your opportunity in primetime against the Tennessee Titans, and you're blown out of the building. This is a team. The Tennessee Titans, they couldn't even practice. Three practices in 16 days. You're playing on a Tuesday. And they show up and they blow you out of the stadium. Now you get another week against another playoff contender, against Patrick Mahomes, against the Kansas City Chiefs. Josh Allen trying to ascend to be an MVP, not only candidate, but winner. And here's your chance. Yeah, everybody's watching. You're playing the defending champs. You get an opportunity to show you belong. You got to go out and do it tonight.
The Raiders put up a 40-piece on the Chiefs defense, a 40-piece. The Bills have one loss on the season. I know Miami's at 500, but the threat in the division is the Patriots, who are sitting at 2-3. You know, like the Chiefs kind of last year when they hit a little bit of a rough patch, that was without Mahomes. They looked a little ordinary without Mahomes. This is with Mahomes. The Chiefs don't, of course, long term, you like the Chiefs, but right now, Chiefs don't want to lose back-to-back games, especially if they give up a lot of points, especially to another AFC title contender. I respect what you guys are saying because I think it's actually a tough call, but I would say there's more on the line for the Chiefs.
All right. You want to talk about Saturday night?
Yes, I do.
What a tremendous fight.
Well, let's get it going. Teofimo Lopez beat Lomachenko by unanimous decision on Saturday night to become the youngest undisputed lightweight champion in boxing history. Lopez started strong, fended off a late surge by Lomachenko in the second half of the fight to get the upset. Max, you know I'm coming to you first. Did you agree with the Lopez unanimous decision?
Oh, yeah, there's nothing to disagree with. Look, boxing, as far as fights go, because boxing has a quirky way of scoring, it's round by round, and unless there's a knockdown, it's just 1 point per round.
Yeah.
So sometimes you could see a fight at the end, you go, fighter A won. But when you break it down round by round, you go, oh, I guess it was 6-6. For those who had Lopez or had Lomachenko as a draw, because you can't possibly have Lomachenko winning the fight,
mm-hmm.
You gave, look, it's like this. Here are the definitive rounds. Rounds 1, 3 through 6, and 12 were definitely Lopez. That's 6 rounds. That's
okay.
At least a draw.
Mm-hmm.
Lomachenko won rounds 8 through 11 for sure. That's 4 rounds, right? So one fighter won 6 definitively, one fighter won 4. Rounds 2 and 7 could have gone either way.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say the possible range of scores is 8-4 to Lopez to 6-6 draw. And I would say that the most of the scores you would find are in the middle, around 7-5 Lopez. He fought a great fight. They say a good big man beats a good little man, and Lopez is a naturally larger fighter. Lomachenko had 400 amateur fights, lost one, and beat that guy twice with 2 gold medals. He is a great, great fighter. A good big man doesn't beat a great little man. It takes something more than a good big man to do that, and Lopez is more than just good. He kept Lomachenko honest with his jab, body shots, and the threat of a big right hand. And when Lomachenko, usually he figures his guy out, and then comes the avalanche. When the avalanche came, because it came, Lopez fought it off, won the 12th round decisively, and won that fight. That's a great performance by a new star.
I had Lopez winning the first 6 rounds and the 12th. Easy.
You understand? To me, I'm talking about in terms of numbers, number of rounds, that was it for me. And I thought Lomachenko needed to knock a knockout to win. He did not. I do agree with Max Kellerman about Lopez showing up in the 12th round and fight. He didn't back away. He didn't listen to his dad saying, you got to fight one, you got to fight one. When Lomachenko came for him, he's like, I'm a fighter. I ain't backing up. And he made sure to show the world that at 23 years of age, I'm a champion. And you're going to have to come take this from me. I'm not giving you a damn thing. I loved his quickness. We know about Lopez's power, but I'm talking about his quickness defensively. Now, obviously, Lomachenko caught him with a few shots as the fight waned. But I saw Lopez being elusive, and I love that because it's one thing for you to have the power and the quickness to go along with the power offensively. A lot of guys can look good until they get hit. There were times where he got hit, and there were other times where he was slipping Lomachenko's punches, and you don't see that. And we all know that Lomachenko's footwork is exceptional. It's practically unrivaled. So you could see what he's done to numerous fighters, which contributed to them quitting, like Nicholas Walters and others. He tried that with Lopez. It didn't work. Lopez's footwork worked. His speed was there. Some power, obviously, but his elusivity is what impressed me most. The fact that he was able to slip a number, not all,
no,
but
he
a
turned
number
with
of those
Lomachenko.
Pitches.
He wouldn't let Lomachenko establish his outside foot.
And I loved it.
Yeah, for me, coming into this fight, obviously I always talk to Max about fighting. I love it. I was thinking, and Lopez mentioned it pre-fight, everybody thought it was going to be very Mayweather-Canelo when they fought and that he would be outclassed. If you look at the first six rounds, it was about patience. He was patient. He didn't rush himself. He used his jab, which is something that we aren't used to seeing him do. And then, obviously, Lomachenko came on. What I was most impressed with was the last round when his father is telling him, you got this fight. He went out and took it. He understood that Lomachenko was going to continue to press, continue to get in range. And when he got in range, he made sure to punch him out of it. And you can see that Lomachenko felt that power. He felt and he understood that if I keep putting myself in this position, it's a possibility that this young bull can knock me out. And I don't get wrapped up into boxing the way that I was this Saturday when the heartbeats were playing before the fights. My heart was beating fast. I had anxiety, and I'm feeling that way. And then I go out and watch this young 23-year-old be calm and be confident and be patient. And there were rounds that he'd win the round, and then he'd wink off to the side like, I got this. And I thought to be fighting such a great fighter like Lomachenko, but to have the understanding of what to do was amazing to me, Max.
You both bring up the 12th round. I totally agree. The fight felt like it hung in the balance, and his father was telling him, don't fight. You know, you have this fight won. That's not Teofimo Lopez. You know what it reminded me of, Stephen A? I think you'll appreciate this. Hagler Leonard. Okay, I'm going all the way back to the 80s. Yeah. Sugar Ray Leonard, Stephen A. He jumped out to a big lead just like Lopez did. And Marvin Hagler, who was the best pound for pound back then, just like Lomachenko a lot of people think is, started pouring it on. Lomachenko was headbutting him, roughing him up, beating him up a little bit. And at a certain round, in the 9th round, Hagler's coming on. Oh, here it comes. And Sugar Ray Leonard flurried off the rope, Stephen A. You remember that?
Yes.
And wouldn't let Hagler take the play away. That's what
reminded me of the
way Lopez fought Lomachenko off and dominated him in the 12th round. That is one of the signature moments in a kid who could, in a kid's career, could wind up in the Hall of Fame one day.
Here's what I think we should walk away from. As great as Lomachenko is, Lopez is better for boxing, in my estimation. Yep. His power, his knockout percentage, his personality. We need that in boxing. That's why I was rooting for him, and that's why I'm happy
he
won.
Yep. I'll leave you guys with this. I always look forward to Monday shows. There's so much to talk about, but tomorrow's going to be a lot of fun, too.
Ooh,
we got a doubleheader, Chiefs-Bills, Cowboys-Cards in action. We will get into all of it. RC, stay safe. We'll talk to you soon, sir. We'll be back here tomorrow. Have a great day.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Really? You didn't let that go yet?
Wired now?